6. The Crossing. Moro did not have to pretend to be ill on the voyage. He spent the first 3 days seasick. He slumped on the bed in their stateroom, the fancy satin blankets and swansdown pillows providing little comfort. His net mask was a damp sponge of stale sweat that clung to his face like a starfish. He could eat the occasional orange slice or cracker, or bits of a sugar biscuit, but that was all. Octavia had brought him lemonade, but just the smell of it made him retch. "The deviled kidney is excellent," Octavia said, sitting at the glass dining table in their room, cutting the kidney with a silver knife. Modo gritted his teeth, biting back a snide reply. "The fried onions are straight from heaven," she added. "You are intentionally being cruel, Miss Milkweed." "Oh, suddenly so formal, Modo. Is our marriage already on the rocks?" He ignored her. "I should sleep on the floor," he said. "You have the bed. I'm well enough now." Octavia laughed. "Don't be foolish. I've slept in worse holes." She had used the sofa as her bed for the voyage. They'd been given a Chinese privacy screen, which Octavia pulled across the room at night. Modo had insisted the lights stay low. In his state, it had become impossible to shift into a more attractive appearance. He had tried twice and nearly passed out both times. He remembered Mrs. Finchley, the closest person he had to a mother, wiping his forehead whenever he was sick as a child. How he missed the sound of her voice, the touch of her hands, and the way she used to hold him. It seemed 100 years ago. But even then, even with a fever, Mr. Socrates would make Modo test the limits of his abilities to transform. "You're deep in thought," Octavia said. "Reliving the plot of some Penny Dreadful?" "At this point, I'm a living Penny Dreadful." Octavia laughed, and Modo was pleased with himself. "You said you were married before." He gripped the sheet. He'd punch her first husband if the fellow wasn't already dead. She shrugged. "It didn't last. My beloved was old." "Beloved? You really were married?" "Ah, it was just another game for Mr. Socrates. My husband was an old Chinese agent called Ma. We were investigating a triad, a Chinese underground society." "I know what a triad is," Modo huffed, wishing his voice didn't sound so whiny. "How did he die?" "Not arsenic, in case you were worried. As I mentioned, he was old. One day, over breakfast, his heart gave out, and our investigation was over."
"Sounds horrible."
"Well, I didn't actually see him die. I was still sleeping behind a screen, not unlike this one. He was overbearing, opinionated, and loud, and he drooled. Otherwise, I was sad to see old Ma go. Mr. Socrates was very angry with him for having the audacity to die while on assignment, so neither of us should ever do that." "Don't even joke about dying. When were you married?"
"A few months before you and I met." "Now, enough questions. It's time for my little Penny Dreadful to sleep," Octavia said.
"Must I?" "You can hardly keep your eyes open. I'll entertain myself by strutting up and down the deck and dining in the Paris Café, where the young lords and gentlemen will no doubt watch me like hawks." The thought made Modo clench his fists under the sheet. "A married woman shouldn't be out on her own." "Tut, tut." Her hand was on the doorknob. "I'll tell them I'm getting my sick husband some tea." "Sleep well, my lord," she said, then was out the door. Modo did fall asleep, but it took longer than usual. That night he woke up and listened to Octavia's slight snore. It was such an odd feeling to have her right in the same room. He had thought about her so often since their first meeting, and in the months that they were apart between assignments. He had wandered the streets of London, swung from rooftop to rooftop for hours looking for her, hoping for a glimpse. And now here she was, only feet away. What was she dreaming about? Him? The thought made him choke back a laugh. No, she had much better things to dream about. Men with faces that were permanently handsome, for one. By the fifth day, he was able to keep meals down, and he felt almost healthy. He found, too, that he could finally change his face into the one Octavia knew, a man he called the Knight. So, while she was out, He'd managed the transformation, then daubed on sweet-smelling lotions and dressed himself in his finest morning jacket and black trousers. When she returned, he was sitting at the glass table, playing solitaire.
"Ah, you are alive, and sans mask. This is a momentous day."
She sat across from Modo and stared at him for so long that he felt nervous sweat beading on his forehead.
"Why are you looking at me? You seem different somehow."
"In what way?"
"I can't quite put my finger on it. Perhaps you just look older. You might pass for 16.
16, he said with a huff.
"I'm 20. That's a lie, Modo. One day I'll figure out your age. For now, though, shall we go out for a stroll and get our morning victuals?"
She said this last bit in a falsetto. Modo wasn't quite sure whom she was imitating, but he smiled. He stood and nearly fell over.
"Ah, you're still a touch weak on your pins," she said. "I'll give you a hand."
He leaned on Octavia's shoulder as she helped him out of the cabin. He caught a whiff of his own sweaty stink. Was she wrinkling her nose? If he hadn't felt so tired, he would have rejoiced at being this close to her. She led him onto the gangway. The wind was brisk and cold. He gazed at the horizon, the greatest uninterrupted distance he'd ever seen. He had peeked out the porthole in their room, but this was his first panoramic view of the Atlantic. "No wonder ancient sailors believed there were waterfalls at the end of the earth," he said.
"Yes, it's something, isn't it?"
Octavia agreed.
"Though, after 5 days, I've had my fill of endless nothingness. I want to see America, to walk the streets of New York and be a part of the great hubbub. Imagine, New York! Maybe we'll like it so much we'll just stay there."
"Don't say that. We have an assignment."
"Ah, you are such a fussy duffer some days. You need a good meal. We're off to the Paris Café."
She led him along the gangway and to the centre of the upper deck. A smokestack loomed above them, sputtering out smoke from the depths of the ship. In the café, several gentlemen and their wives sat at tables, eating breakfast. Modo and Octavia found an empty table near a man reading the Times.
"That's not today's paper, is it?" Modo quipped.
The man looked up, squinting through his monocle at Modo.
"It most certainly is not," he said, then put his nose back in the paper.
"It must be hard being such a dummerker," Octavia whispered. "Never a smile or a chuckle. Did you know there's 1,000 third-class passengers on the decks below us, and only 100 of us up here enjoying the sun? That doesn't seem fair."
"Oh, it's not fair," Octavia shrugged.
"But it's not a problem we can solve now. We've got bigger fish to catch."
She laughed at her own joke. When the waiter arrived, Modo ordered porridge, while Octavia asked for eggs and a croissant.
"So we search for an agent who, in turn, is searching for a creature from the great depths," he said.
Then, remembering all the literature he'd memorized, he recited,
"Full fathom five thy father lies." "Shakespeare again, Modo. How trite." "It's not trite," he hissed, surprising himself at how loud he could be. "It's art."
"Pfft." Octavia waved her hand.
"You know my thoughts on Shakespeare. It's like reading mud."
He was silent until their breakfast arrived, then asked,
"Do you have any guesses about what happened to Mr. Weil? Do you think he's been captured?"
"Oh, he's likely blued, slewed, and tipsy."
"What?"
"Drunk. That's my guess."
"I can't believe one of Mr. Socrates' agents would get drunk. That would be unprofessional."
"I see it all the time. These older agents get burned out and turn to the bottle."
"Hmm. Well, we'll just have to wait and see if your theory is correct. Speaking of theories, what do you think of this ichthyneo? Is it a giant fish?"
"I have no idea. Obviously Mr. Socrates doesn't either."
"Why do you think Mr. Socrates sent us together?" he asked.
"Because he knows you need someone to look after you."
"That's not true. Who pulled you from the Thames? Thapa? Mr. Socrates? The Queen?"
"It was you, Tavia," he said.
"Must I thank you every day?"
"Yes,
morn, noon, and night. You can take Sundays and Christmas off."
She laughed.
If you really want my best guess, it's that we're his youngest agents. He needed two people who could convincingly behave as though they were married. We were his most logical choice. Some of his other agents are so ugly, no one would believe they'd find spouses. Chi grinned, but Modo found it hard to respond in kind. Yes, I suppose some of them are ugly. I must admit, Modo, she motioned around the ship, I like this upper-class life. Perhaps if I found the right rich gentleman, I'd retire. You'll never retire, he said, trying not to picture her married off to some rich, rotund knob. Perhaps, perhaps not. She eyed him closely again. What I still don't understand is how you change your appearance. Magicians don't give up their secrets. No, I suppose they don't. Not even to their friends. More than anything, Modo wished he could explain why he couldn't show his face. He would certainly be the ugliest of all the ugly agents. When they were finished eating, Modo said, I'm already worn out. We should retire to our cabin. Octavia nodded. When they stood up, she bumped into the man with the paper. Sorry, so sorry, she said, giggling. I find ships so topsy-turvy. The man glared at Modo.
You ought to keep a better watch on your wife, he snapped. Women are delicate, clumsy creatures.
Good day to you, Modo said. As they walked back to the cabin, Octavia began to giggle again, and by the time they stepped inside, she was full out laughing. What's so funny? Modo asked, smiling. That man was rude. He said to keep a better watch on me, she said between giggles. With that, she produced a golden pocket watch hanging from a fob. He should have been watching his own watch. You stole it, Modo cried. We could get into trouble. That dunderhead will never figure it out. I wish I could be there to see the look on his face when he checks the time. And, imagining that, Modo joined her in her laughter.